Hey, everybody. Welcome into Redacted. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And on this show, we cover the stories the mainstream media largely ignores, or they put a huge pile of garbage propaganda and spin on it. And today, we're going to look at a couple of stories that are covered in a pile of propaganda and spin, including what does a future President Trump presidency look like? Well, seems like Democrats suddenly are all on the same page. Major news publications within like 24 hours of each other all published major hit pieces warning all of us that, yes, President Trump will become a dictator. We should all prepare ourselves for it. Matt Gaetz says this is a clear sign that they're lining us up to watch them target President Trump, even calling for an assassination. He believes this is the motive. We're going to dive deep into what this looks like. And President Trump responded to all of this last night.
Plus, the House passed a resolution saying that anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism. Dan Cohen, a Jew and a reporter, is going to make the case that that itself is anti-Semitism because it says that all Jewish people must think alike. It also leaves large swaths of Jewish people out. It's crazy. So why are they doing this? Dan Cohen is going to join us.
We're also going to look at what happened right prior to October 7th. You know, it's very similar to what happened on Wall Street right before 9/11. New research is out and analyzing all sorts of interesting stock trades. What happened? Why were millionaires made on the backs of the tragedy of October 7th? We'll analyze that and so much more as Redacted starts right now. Hey, everybody. Welcome into the big show on this Wednesday. Good to see all of you. Hope you're doing well wherever you are. Let us know in the chat where you're joining us from around the world. Good to see you guys on Rumble, on YouTube. Thank you guys so much for subscribing. We are live every day at 4 p.m. Eastern time. So thank you guys so much for your support. Hope you're doing well today.
Yes, indeed. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for supporting independent media. Now, remember, Redacted is a brand that has a newsletter and a show. Both of them come out every single day. You can find it at redacted.inc. That's the newsletter that we want to ask you to subscribe to because it goes along with this show. You get all of the stories that we talk about here plus more. Now, in addition to the newsletter, which is totally free. We don't put anything behind a paywall. We don't ask you to subscribe to anything, but you can, if you'd like to show us some love, support the Redacted store where you will get things like these handy dandy mugs that you see on the set. We have merchandise that maybe you're interested in for Christmas time, hoodies, posters. You can show the world that you're a Redacted rebel, that you will not comply with mainstream narratives, or that you are a non-pacifist peace extremist. My favorite, highly debatable.
Wait, hold on. Keep that. Yeah. Can you say that again? Because so many people took umbrage with the way that you pronounced that word last night on the show.
Non-pacifist peace extremist.
Where is the V in that word that you're pronouncing? I'm just
pacifist.
Curious. It's a pacifist. There's no V.
Well, that's how it comes out. That's how I say it.
Okay.
All right. I don't make fun of your accent. Would you like to?
I was just pointing out that it's not an accent. Those are two different words. People were saying, wait, what is she saying last night? They're like, they're two different words. Pacifist. Pacifist. The word pacifist means.
What I'm saying.
Okay. Say it again.
Oh, if there's no V, we need to change all the T-shirts.
I know. We got to go back to the printing presses. There was a huge debate last night in the chat room
about how I'm pronouncing it.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not going to play. Let's just get to the news.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Can't do that. Can't play on that one. I'm just saying that's the way people just, I'm just trying to encourage how the chat room was responding to it. That's all.
Okay.
So pacifist.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay. That's what I said. Booty trap. All right. Let's get to the news, shall we? Well, desperate people do desperate things. And if you're the Biden administration about to be thrown out of office, well, guess what? We should all be very concerned about what comes next, because the liberal media appears to be falling in line with the Biden messaging. And all of the major newspapers published simultaneous stories warning that a Trump presidency would be a dictatorship. It's like they're all handed a big pile of the same talking points by the deep state, by the intelligence community, and then they all run with them and they all publish these stories. And it's all timing is unbelievable. Here's the New York Times version of it. Why a second Trump presidency may be more radical than his first. Donald Trump has long exhibited authoritarian impulses, but his policy operation is now more sophisticated and the buffers to check him are weaker. Really? His operation is now more sophisticated? Okay. Here's the Atlantic magazine. The Atlantic simultaneously published this, a warning. And they show an ominous police officer at the Capitol building pointing back to Capitol Hill protesters that were coming in. So their point, you know, the imagery there is stark. And it says, America survived the first Trump term, though not without sustaining serious damage. A second term, if there is one, will be much worse. So America suffered serious damage as a result of the Trump presidency. We're doing fine right now. Can you imagine how America would be in pain and imperiled if Trump became president again? That would be serious problems.
This is fine.
We're fine right now. The millions of people pouring across our southern border, we're totally fine right now. But here's the one, though. Here's the major news publication that pushed people over the edge, and it was the Washington Post, their opinion page. And here you see Matt Gaetz tweeting this at the top. But here's the headline from the Washington Post. A Trump dictatorship is increasingly inevitable. We should stop pretending. And the article basically goes on to call him a dictator and says opens up a door for nut jobs to target Trump. So Matt Gaetz at the top there tweeting, they're obviously greenlighting assassination. Congressman Matt Gaetz writes, you're basically saying, hey, Trump could turn into Hitler. So we're putting out the warning to anybody who's reading this right now, wants to know, this is what America could be facing. This guy's a dictator. He's going to become a dictator. He's going to be like Hitler. So we're warning you, America. Congressman Matt Gaetz says Democrats are greenlighting the assassination of President Trump as the only way that they'll beat him. Gaetz isn't the first one to say this, by the way. Former Secret Service agent Dan Bongino just said the same thing. But Gaetz said this yesterday on Dr. Gorka's show. I want you to listen because he addresses it straight on.
It seems to be the Democrats were issued their talking points over the weekend, and they can't defend Biden anymore. And so all they're saying is Donald Trump, Nazi, 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 fascism, dictatorship. It looks like that is their campaign platform for 2024.
I think it's even worse. I think that they are greenlighting assassination. Yeah. You know, when you hear people talk about Trump as Hitler or as some sort of authoritarian tyrant, they're trying to justify violence against him and violence against his supporters. And it is sickening and un-American. I condemn it in the strongest possible terms. But they're done having a debate with us about trade policy or foreign policy or economic policy. We're just all so evil to our core, right, that we have to be vanquished from the debate. And
I think Gaetz and Bongino are absolutely right. I've been on the record saying the very same thing for almost 2 years now. And I've said it on the show that the deep state will not allow Trump to become president. And of course, they have many tools at their disposal to make that happen. You can read that however you like. But they have the Department of Justice at their disposal, and which they are weaponizing against Donald Trump.
Yes.
Absolutely weaponizing it against him. And of course, they have the CIA, which is very good at assassinations, at their disposal. So I agree with Congressman Matt Gaetz that there are some very bad people out there that are looking to do some very bad things to President Trump. And I truly hope he has amazing security around him to protect him. So Liz Cheney, former congresswoman who lost her reelection in a blaze of glory, mm-hmm. Liz Cheney, she has a new book out. And so she's out now on all of the major networks. I mean, they're putting her out everywhere. I mean, the New York Times did a big fluff piece for her. She's a neocon, right? So imagine this, like
second generation neocon.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
She's all over the place, but all over the liberal, you know, media. She's on MSNBC, NBC, ABC this week. They all did big effusive interviews with her. And so here is where she was on NBC's Today Show. They did a big fluff piece for her. And here's what she had to say about Trump's presidency. She really thinks it's a danger to the United States. Watch.
You've said we are sort of sleepwalking into dictatorship in the United States. Dictatorship. Is that what we would have if we reelect Donald Trump?
I think it's a very, very real threat and concern. And I don't say any of that lightly. And frankly, it's painful for me as someone who, you know, has spent her whole life in Republican politics, who grew up as a Republican, to watch what's happening to my party and to watch the extent to which Donald Trump himself has, you know, basically determined that the only thing that matters is him, his power, his success, and that is not somebody you can entrust with the power of the presidency.
It seems crazy to ask this and even crazier to fathom it, but do you believe if Donald Trump were elected next year that he would try to stay in office beyond a second term? That he would never leave office?
There's no question.
We think he would try to stay in power forever?
Absolutely. I mean, he's already done it once. And in fact, if you look at what he did in the run-up to January 6th in terms of his pressure on the vice president not to count legitimate electoral votes, his pressure on the Department of Justice, on state officials, and then refusing to send help when the Capitol was under attack, he's already attempted to seize power. And he was stopped, thankfully, and for the good of the nation and the republic. But he said he will do it again. He's expressed no remorse for what he did.
But he did leave, and he did leave peacefully.
Right.
I mean, he did challenge things that I, you know, in hindsight now seemed legitimate to actually be challenged.
Right.
But he left peacefully.
Yeah, he just didn't show up at the inauguration.
Right.
He wasn't going to be there to champion on President Biden.
Yeah.
Am I the only one that wanted to yell objection leading the witness to that journalist?
Right, like, to Savannah Guthrie.
Just laid right in her lap.
Oh, yeah, softball interview.
And she says, it seems crazy to say this, but it's not because that's the thing that they warned us about at the end of the Trump presidency when he was voted out and he did leave, right? They scared us for months between the election and the president-elect inauguration that he wasn't going to go, that it was going to be this, you know, violent transfer of power, and it wasn't.
Like a civil war.
Right.
And, you know, they completely hide the fact that he came out that afternoon. He told everyone to go home. No violence. It was pulled off Twitter. His Twitter account was canceled as a result of it.
Right.
Like, and he literally in that message, which was later deleted because they took down his Twitter account.
Yeah.
He was calling for people to not be violent and to go, you know, to go home.
Right. The thing with her is she's not offering a different brand of Republicanism that people can, who are anti-Trump, can then lob on to. Right.
No, so, she hid January 6th evidence.
Yes.
Right. She hid things from the American people about what happened on January 6th.
She made an Oscar worthy movie with a narrative that she thought would bolster her political career.
She's a liar. And she's promulgated this idea of Russiagate. She's also put forward this idea that, you know, that there were, you know, the entire Capitol was ransacked by MAGA extremists.
Right.
Hid January 6th evidence, hid evidence about federal employees being there that day, kept that from the American people. And then she lost an election in her home state. And now she's out there with a book. And by the way, so apparently, and there's a whole bunch of effusive articles about, wow, Liz Cheney, she's back and she's got this number one best-selling book right now. It's number one on Amazon. It's the number one book in the world right now in every category.
With 46 ratings?
With 46 reviews? That's 46 five-star reviews. There's, I mean, and if you read, it's hilarious, by the way, if you read the reviews on Amazon, I mean, okay, for just look, here's what happens. And I've heard this from other sources on what happens, what these organizations will do, these like think tanks and so forth, they'll buy up thousands of copies of a book in order to drive it up the charts, right? So it's sitting in a warehouse somewhere. Actual human beings aren't going and buying these books. And they're buying them, you know, in bulk, so it shows up higher on the charts. And then they get bots to go in and write phony reviews. To go in and write five-star reviews, effusive reviews, you know, and they pretend like these are actual human beings reading these books. Who's buying a Liz Cheney book? Could you imagine? And by the way, the hardcover edition of this is $30. When Americans are having trouble paying their rent right now, they're not even buying Christmas gifts right now. They're buying a Liz Cheney book for $30. Maybe I'm wrong. How many of you watching right now bought a Liz Cheney book? Well, number one on Amazon right now. I find it very interesting that that's the case. Go ahead, David.
And I want to point something out as well that I find coincidental is like yesterday, I think it was yesterday, Speaker Mike Johnson announced that they're going to get the J6 footage out, but now they want to blur the faces of people that were involved so that the DOJ can't go after people and all that stuff. And it just seems coincidental that if they do that, that's going to take years to get that footage out, which would take it probably well beyond the election. And now this narrative is coming out, you know, and they're going to use J6 as a major thing against Trump. And so that's going to delay us seeing the real footage. So it's kind of like, is that a coincidence or?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Well, this new Speaker of the House is interesting, right? The very first thing that he does is like push for additional funding to Ukraine. Like, wow. Okay. So guess
he's
it's
a real
not
groundbreaker.
Yeah. Real groundbreaker. Not, I guess not better than Kevin McCarthy. Anyway, so Dan Bongino, you know, has been talking about Trump's safety and pointing out that yes, in fact, Trump's threat matrix right now is geometrically higher than Biden's by a landslide. The number of threats being leveled against President Trump, former President Trump, is geometrically higher. Therefore, you would think he would have a larger contingency of Secret Service protection around him. He said, no, not even close. Not even close. If you're the sitting president of the United States, you have a massive contingent and amount of money that's there around you to protect you as a Secret Service. Former presidents have a much smaller footprint. They don't even get the full armored vehicles that the president has. They don't get to drive those at all. They get basically light armored Suburbans as protection. They also don't receive the communications service that presidents get, which is the White House communications to monitor all movement and audio traffic to make sure that no one's monitoring communications and protection in that regard, so people don't know your location and everything like that. And he said he's very concerned about the president's security, and he sure hopes that there is some extra level of security that's being placed around the president, but that's probably not likely the case. I'm very concerned about that. Trump was asked about this last night, though, on the on this town hall meeting with Sean Hannity, and whether or not would he become a dictator? You know, this is what all the liberal media is saying. You're going to become a dictator, and you're going to become an authoritarian, and you're going to, you know, get rid of Congress, and you're going to shut down the rest of the government. It's just going to be you as dictator, like Hitler. Are you going to be like Hitler? Listen to Trump's response.
I want to go back to this one issue, though, because the media has been focused on this and attacking you.
Yeah.
Under no circumstances, you are promising America tonight. You would never abuse power as retribution against anybody.
Except for day one.
Except
for he's going crazy. Except for day one.
Meaning?
I want to close the border and I want to drill.
That's
drill,
not
a,
that's
drill.
That's not that's not retribution. I got
I'm gonna be, you know, he keeps we love this guy. He says, you're not gonna be a dictator, are you? I said, no, other than day one. We're closing the border and we're drilling. After that, I'm not a dictator.
So that sounds to me like you're going back to the policies when you were president.
That's
all right,
exactly.
Take a break. Just getting.
So that's not being a dictator. That's executive privilege and executive power to say, I'm closing the border and protecting the United States. There's a flood of illegal immigrants pouring across the border where we would close it down. That's not being a dictator. That's putting America first.
Well, what they're scaring us about is he'll go after journalists who are critical of him, right? And he was during his presidency. He just didn't deal with people he didn't like. He just was like, I'm not dealing with you anymore.
He did interviews more than any other president.
Right. And in fact, I will admit, because I was very scared of a Trump presidency because I watched a lot of MSNBC at the time. I worked for NBC at the time, and I thought because we had been critical of his campaign that he would come after us. Like, I literally was up at night thinking that. Like, it was a scare tactic. He never gave a shit about us. Like, that, you know, we were able to say things and we were freer then than we are now. You know, the things that, like, beyond that, taking away liberties, civil liberties of speech, of education, of all of those things. He never did those things, even though we were all afraid of it.
You know? No, and he did interviews on networks that were, you know, not supportive or not, I don't know, not favorable to him all the time.
Yeah.
And he was not afraid to challenge those individuals. So I don't know. It's interesting. But this idea that he would be a dictator, what is a dictator then? The idea that he would close down.
He would harm opponents.
He would maybe shut down churches.
Yes.
He would ban the media.
Right.
He would take state control of the media, shut down opposition media. Uh-huh. Sounds very much like what Zelensky's been doing in Ukraine.
Right.
That's what a dictator would do.
Yeah.
So we can't. We want to make sure we stay far away from that. That's also what the Trudeau government has been doing. Right. If you don't have that, if you don't register a certain way and get approval from the Trudeau government as a journalist, sorry, you're not going to be able to be viewed here in the state in Canada. They're very interesting. But certainly they have gone after him. Tucker Carlson was just asked about this yesterday. Very interesting to hear his response about Trump and the political persecution of this person by the DOJ and by liberals, and certainly in the media, and how this is handled. Listen to this.
What do you think?
I certainly support Trump, I'll tell you that. And I can tell you, I mean, I've always agreed with Trump's policies, always. And I lost friends over it. And I've never really actively supported anybody because it's not my job to actively support people. Right. I watch, you know, right. I like to watch. But I'm a voyeur.
Yeah.
But I became an active Trump supporter when they raided Mar-a-Lago last summer, the summer of 2022. That can't stand.
No, that can't.
And
that
I
was something.
Agree with Trump on a lot. But even if I disagreed with Trump on a lot, I'd still be a Trump supporter because you cannot allow that. You cannot allow the regime, the president of the United States, to use the Justice Department to knock the front runner out of the race. You can't do that.
No, you can't do that.
So it's bigger than Trump. It's bigger than Biden. It's a question of, you know, do you want to live in a free country with a functioning justice system? You know,
that's exactly.
And
right.
So I'm voting for Trump. And if they convict him, I will send him the max donations and I will lead protests. That's how I feel.
That's how I feel.
Because, too. And by the way, if I thought that he had committed some real crime, I wouldn't feel that way, but he didn't. He and Biden are both found with classified documents at home, along with every other former high-level federal official in history, but only Trump is indicted? Like, tell me how that works. Oh, shut up!
I have to really think about how I feel about this. That's well said. Because I absolutely do feel like, even though I've never supported Trump, I absolutely do feel like he's being targeted by the Justice Department as a political opponent for people in power who are uncomfortable with what he was not able to do while he was in power, which was drain the swamp and pull out of foreign wars. And at this point, you know, most of us who are just single issue, no foreign wars, no death voters. It does feel like Trump is the one, even though, you know.
I mean, can you name somebody else right now at all in American politics who's going to close the border, who's going to bring drilling back to the United States, who is going to end all of this boondoggle around environmental ESG and garbage environmental policy, boondoggle to the tens of billions of dollars, say no to additional foreign wars? I don't know. And, you know, look, he had 4 years to kind of prove that he could do this and drain the swamp, and he didn't. So,
well,
to be fair.
Well, Vivek Ramaswamy has said a lot of those things, but he also has a lot of anti-China rhetoric that seems to be, you know, pulling us into a war in the Pacific. So that's what I am watching at this point. So we're not, you know, lending our support to any political candidate.
Yeah. But it's just interesting to watch. But they're, you know, painting him as a dictator and pulling him into this idea that, well, maybe people should take to the streets and go after Trump. And that's what Congressman Gates and certainly Dan Bongino are worried about, the president's safety. Let us know in the comments. What do you think about that? Do you think the president is safe? Do you think nut jobs are going to be going after the president in any kind of way? Let us know.
It does seem like the turning point has happened this weekend, though, because Democrats are no longer supporting the president. They are just issuing their, they're going against Trump. They can't, yeah. That's now the playboard.
Well, it's also interesting for Tucker. Tucker was never really, he supported his policies, but he never really supported him as a person. Like, he didn't think he was like a great person.
Yeah.
But he also, at the same time, and I know this, he's never voted before. He's openly admitted, he doesn't vote. He just likes to float around. And as a journalist, he doesn't vote for either party. But for him to say, I'm voting for him this time is really interesting.
Yeah, you know? I was surprised to hear that too.
Yeah. All right, we've got more news to get to here on your Wednesday. We're going to look at this new bill that just passed House of Representatives. I mean, it's unbelievable. Passed a resolution that specifically says that anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism. Really? The House of Representatives? How far will this go? Is this just a big political move, a big wet kiss to Israel, or will it actually pass and go on and be signed by the president of the United States? What will happen here? We'll look at that. Plus, did they know about October 7th? We're going to look at some stock trading data from some people that may really raise your eyebrows. You know, we were told, oh, it was a total surprise. No one knew anything about October 7th. It was a total surprise. Oh, okay. Really? That's interesting. We're going to look at some really interesting data coming up. But first, have you ever Googled yourself? Shocked to see your personal information exposed in one of those public listing sites? Yeah. You ever get like robo phone calls and all sorts of spam emails? You're like, wait a minute, I didn't sign up for any of this. Well, that's because data brokers have got access to your data, and they are making lots of money selling your information to robocallers, spammers, and others who want to learn more about you. So our sponsor over at Aura can identify data brokers exposing your info and submit opt-out requests on your behalf. Brokers are legally required to remove your info if you ask them to, but they make it super hard to do so. And let Aura handle it for you. Aura also does so much more to protect you and your family from online threats that you can't see. It's really easy to set up, so you don't have to download several different apps to get things like parental controls, antivirus, VPN, password management, identity theft insurance, and more. You get everything at all one affordable price. And it's really, really cheap to do that. And here's the thing. You can really let people continue to exploit and profit off of your private information. Or you can go to aura.com/redacted and start your 2-week free trial. And you'll be stunned at how much information you'll be able to find that Aura will be able to find in that 2-week free trial. Just try it out for 2 weeks. You're going to be stunned in those first 2 weeks. Again, for free. Aura.com/redacted. Go there, aura.com/redacted. We'll have a link in the description box below in case you're driving or busy. Again, Aura, aura.com/redacted.
Dan Cohen from Uncaptured Media is a Jewish American journalist who has just been declared an anti-Semite because he is anti-Zionist. That comes from House Resolution 894, which just passed, that declares that anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism. That would also make most Hasidic Jews anti-Semitic as well. So Dan, thank you for joining us. I want to talk about a couple of things regarding the war in Israel. But first this, because I'm sure this is not the first time you've been given the anti-Semitic label, but is it the most official?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, hundreds of, or maybe thousands of messages and comments I've gotten on Twitter, including death threats for being a self-hating Jew, are numerous, but this is officially it. According to the U.S. Congress, myself and the largest Hasidic Jewish sect in the world are actually anti-Semites.
Okay. Do you think this is do you think it's a violation of the First Amendment, first of all? And do you think it just is a lack of understanding of anti-Zionist movement?
A violation of the First Amendment? I mean, I don't know, because there's nothing legally binding about it. It's just, changes the definition of a word according to Congress, but it's not as if there's no teeth to it. I think it's going to be used to ramp up the sort of McCarthyite campaign going on in universities and in, the business world where, all of a sudden, you have certain political opinions, you're supposed to be like pro-diversity, you know, pro-LGBTQ, go through all these trainings, and then suddenly now you know, they want you to express certain opinions, and then now certain means if you're, you know, if you oppose, criticize Israel's war on Gaza, then, you know, suddenly you're anti-Semitic and you're a racist. So I think it's going to be cracked down on, you know, students and you know, the professional life and this kind of thing. I mean, I just look at it logically, you know, if anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism, then Zionism is Judaism. Now, Zionism actually was always historically rejected by Judaism. I mean, when Zionism first came around, it was denounced by Orthodox Jews, openly, by Reform Jews. I mean, there was the grand the great Rebbe of the leader, historical leader of the Satmar movement, which is in Williamsburg in Brooklyn. If you see Orthodox Jews there, Joel Teitelbaum, he said that Zionism or the Holocaust, he believed, was actually punishment, was divine punishment for Zionism. And he believed that Zionists were actually responsible for the Holocaust. So, I mean, there's a wide range of thoughts among Jews on Zionism, but to say that anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism means that Zionism is Judaism. Now, if you look, like, think about it more, if Zionism is Judaism, then all Jews are loyal to the Zionist project, which is the state of Israel. And that reaffirms the idea that all Jews, myself, even though I'm secular and, you know, I'm just a pretty regular American, or all of those Jews living in, you know, New York and in Brooklyn, regardless of what their political ideology is, they are all loyal to the state of Israel, is what that actually means, which means they are fifth column. They are not loyal Americans. They don't belong in, you know, in the United States or Canada or whatever European country, with any other country. They belong in Israel. So it is actually this resolution saying that anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism is actually anti-Semitic itself. It is an affirmation of anti-Semitic thought about Jews in the world. And so it's really just classical European anti-Semitism reaffirmed in 2023 in the U.S. Congress. And it shows that even, you know, in my opinion, even as, you know, 100 years ago, Jews were persecuted in this country. You know, my grandfather, who's a secular guy, his name was Saul. He changed his name to Paul for business reasons, you know, to have a Christian name. That's not the case anymore. So today, you know, Jews are, of course, overrepresented in powerful positions, as, you know, is no secret to anyone. But even though Jews are basically in a golden age inside the United States, the powers that be, to some degree, still view Jews as a fifth element, as outsiders. And this is because of Zionism has given them this logic. I mean, it's totally anti-Semitic.
Yeah, I liken it to saying all Black people must vote Democrat because they cannot have diversity of thought inside of that one group. And so we would never say that, or we should not say things like this. Now, you mentioned the Satmar Jews. I want to show this statement that they put about this resolution today, saying that Torah Jews want to live in peace with Muslims and Christians in the Holy Land. Therefore, being against Zionism is never anti-Semitism. And so, again, it seems like either House representatives that voted for this either don't care or they care more. This is my opinion. They care more about Israel and controlling thought that is anti-Israel than either of those things. Is that what you think?
Yeah. I mean, I think I don't know that Twitter account. We have to be careful about taking Twitter accounts. You know, anybody can make a Twitter account and get a blue check. And actually, you know, Orthodox Jews refrain from using social media and all these kinds of things. So it's not necessarily like an official statement. However, there like the largest gathering, I think, of Orthodox Jews, maybe in the world, a huge, huge gathering of Satmar Jews just a few days ago in New York, where they, you know, repeated their denunciation of Zionism, their opposition to the state of Israel on theological grounds. I mean, it's purely theological for them. So, you know, there's no question about it. So, I mean, when Congress says this, it's amazing that you have Gentiles, non-Jews, telling religious and all kinds of Jews what they believe and what they are allowed to believe, what they're not allowed to believe. And I mean, you know, you mentioned the comparison between telling all Black people you have to vote for the Democratic Party. To me, it's even worse than that, because it's like, not you have to, that you belong to a foreign nation. Like, all Black people, you know, go back to Africa, go back, you know, that's essentially what it's saying. But because, you know, imagine if like Black people, you know, had established some like settler, which, you know, they had actually a settler nation in Africa, colonizing actual Africans. And then, like, I don't know, white senators or the House was like, all Black people in the United States are actually loyal to that country. That's the level of insanity. It's basically a nice way of saying, get out of our country. You do not belong here. You're not American. That's why I say it's totally anti-Semitic.
Okay, let's talk about this part of the resolution that says, whereas the slogan "From the River to the Sea" is a rallying cry for the eradication of the State of Israel and the Jewish people, and has been used by anti-Israel protests in the United States and globally. Can you respond to this? Like, give us a little history of "From the River to the Sea" and why they're saying now that this is extremist and should be punishable. Well, I'm saying, well, they're saying it should be punishable. They don't specifically said that, but I think this is a stepping stone. So go ahead.
Yeah, well, they don't say what the phrase actually is. They say part of it. They say "from the river to the sea," but they don't say "Palestine will be free." That's the rest of it, which is what's commonly said at, you know, pro-Palestine rallies in the West. So they are inferring that freedom, call for freedom, is genocidal, which there's just no basis. That's totally a gigantic leap in logic that makes no sense whatsoever. And we're just supposed to accept that, when in fact, what it really means, freedom for everyone living in Palestine. So you don't have a system where you have one people lording over another or afforded more rights than the other. It's basically a call for, it's just simply a call for freedom, as it sounds. Meanwhile, you have, what they don't talk about is the charter of the Likud party, which is Benjamin Netanyahu's party that has ruled Israel most of the time since 1977. And the Likud party charter specifically states, from the Mediterranean to the Jordan, so from the river, from the sea to the river, will always be under Israeli sovereignty. So how are we going to say that Palestinians or people who support Palestine saying "from the river to the sea" is genocidal and anti-Semitic? Meanwhile, the ruling party that is carrying out this horrible war on Gaza and has been occupying the West Bank and Gaza and ethnically cleansing it, building settlements for decades, even before the existence of the Likud, that's actively doing this, is not genocidal, and they won't even address that. So the idea that it's all going to be under Israeli sovereignty forever, completely, you know, obvious what it means, that Palestinians at best will always live as, you know, the underclass, will never be citizens, they will never be treated equal in under Israeli sovereignty, and that's the reality of it, and that's, honestly, you know, it's much worse than that, you know, what we're seeing in Gaza right now.
Okay, let's talk about the West Bank, because the United States today, Secretary of State Antony Blinken, announced visa bans on Israel over settler violence in the West Bank. According to Al Jazeera, since October 7th, Israeli settlers have killed at least 9 Palestinians in the West Bank. That's 3 times as many as last year. And attacks on Palestinian villages and farmers have become commonplace. So first of all, can you explain what they mean by Israeli settlers, and why the heck would they care about a visa ban?
Well, Yeah, so Israeli settlers are Israeli citizens living in legally occupied territory in the West Bank, which Israel's occupied since 1967, and then in 1974 began colonizing and building Jewish-only colonies strategically to prevent the establishment of any kind of Palestinian state. And that's gone on ever since. And that settlement enterprise has been sponsored by the Israeli government. It is a project of the Israeli government. And they will, like, if you say you're a, you know, young couple, you're a young Israeli couple, the government will subsidize your living in the West Bank to some degree. You can get money to go. It's like, you know, going and living in the suburbs that they want to expand or something. It's cheaper. That's like the cheapest place to live. So there are plenty of people who live in big settlements in the West Bank who are not necessarily the most like ideologically radical, you know, people, but it's more for like convenience. And if you drive between, you know, Israel and the West Bank, there's often no distinction. You can't tell when you enter the West Bank unless you're going into Palestinian areas, because there's then an Israeli military presence, but otherwise you can't even really tell a lot of the time. So, but there is a segment of those settlers who are very ideologically fanatical and who will go actively attack Palestinians, go and, you know, burn olive trees and even kill farmers. And this year it's become much worse. And of course, after October 7th, they've become much more violent and aggressive. So these are truly, you know, fanatical people who are protected by the military, and they kill Palestinians and attack them and, you know, and all kinds of terrible things and carry out pogroms. So when, you know, the United States, Blinken says, well, I'm going to restrict visas for them. Yeah, I mean, they don't really care. They're not coming right to the United States, though. Actually, some of them do have ties to the United States. The Americans, you know, U.S.-born Israeli settlers they're overrepresented. Americans are overrepresented among the Israeli settler population, and a lot of the most fanatical ones are actually Americans who went over there. But, you know, I think it's basically window dressing because, you know, it's like sending aid into Gaza. You know, Samantha Power is like in Egypt right now saying, oh, we're sending these trucks into Gaza. And it's like, meanwhile, you're bombing, you know, giving Israel all of the bombs and diplomatic cover to kill, you know, several hundred people every day. So it's really window dressing. But I mean, I think it also shows what the American approach to the whole thing is. The Israelis want to basically ethnically cleanse not only Gaza and push all of, you know, Palestinians in Gaza into the Sinai Desert, into Egypt. They also want to do that in the West Bank. That, you know, they want to take advantage of this opportunity under the cover of war to expel as many Palestinians as possible into Jordan is really where they want to send them. But because of geopolitical realities, Jordan is already basically a big holding cell for Palestinians. Something like 80% of Jordan's population are Palestinians who were expelled in 1948 and then 1967. So Israel's like, look, send the rest of them over there too. We want all of this land. And so the U.S.'s approach is no, like, you don't understand the geopolitical realities that if we do that, that will destabilize Jordan. And having Jordan as kind of a holding cell for all of those Palestinians is important for the long-term stability of Israel. So, you know, you can't get too crazy here. Just go kill a bunch of people in Gaza, do whatever you got to do, but, you know, tone it down a little, I think, is basically in the West Bank is okay. Essentially what the U.S. wants.
So then that's the contradiction here. It's not really about people, it's about politics, because they can't stand for only Palestinians in the West Bank and not for Gaza. But there is a political goal in saying one thing about only one side of the wall. I got it. Okay. Well, thank you for breaking this down for us. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. And you can find Dan and Recaptured Uncaptured Media. Where would you like to direct people to follow you, Dan?
You can check out my site, my Uncaptured Substack. I'm publishing articles there frequently. My YouTube, my Rumble, Uncaptured Media. I'm very active on Twitter at DanCohen3000. So yeah, follow me there.
All right. Thanks again. Always a pleasure to see you.
Great to be back, Natalie.
All right. Well, we want to thank Dan for that. I keep saying he's recaptured media. It's uncaptured media. And he's like, I don't want to be captured at all. No capturing of me. Uncaptured.
Uncaptured.
So that's where you'll find Dan. And we absolutely suggest that you seek out his work. So thank you for that. We have more news to get to. We're going to talk about this congressional hearing about gender and transgender sports, which was a lot of virtue signaling from leftists who don't want to admit how this might hurt women. We're also going to talk about who knew about October 7th attacks by Hamas on Tel Aviv. Who knew and why? And who gained? Qui bono is something we ask a lot. But first, we want to tell you about our friends over at Shopify, because when we started podcasting and broadcasting, you know, we knew that it was prudent to bring sort of merchandise and a store along with our brand, just so people can show their loyalty. That's why we use Shopify, because it's so easy to use and make an e-commerce site that goes along with what we are trying to, offer our listeners, which is the redacted store. So Shopify is a global commerce platform that works with any business, whether you're selling merchandise for your show like we are, or selling bracelets, friendship bracelets, or what that lady seems to be selling there, which is clothes. Whatever it is, you can create an e-commerce platform easily, and it can look beautiful, and you don't have to hire out a lot of heavy IT work. You just do it all there. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify, is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. So sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/redacted. It's all lowercase. Just go to shopify.com/redacted now to grow your business, no matter what size it is right now. Again, you get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redacted. All right.
All right. Thank you guys for subscribing to this show. We really appreciate it. Make sure you guys click on the old subscribe button, because it might be old. Some of you might have actually subscribed to the show before. Excuse me. And then what happens is YouTube unsubscribes you.
Right.
So like once a month, YouTube goes in and like decides that you don't want to be subscribed to that channel, and they unsubscribe people.
Right.
Yesterday, someone wrote us a note and said, why in the world, like I subscribe to Redacted, I choose to watch Redacted content, but then in the suggested sidebar, YouTube just surfaces like Forbes breaking news or other big companies like CNN.
Yeah, they're piggybacking on us. Actually, I noticed that a lot, is that I'll work really hard on a segment and, you know, it is breaking down, let's say, vaccine trials for whatever, you know, by whatever pharmaceutical company. And then as I watch it later, just to maybe see if I can improve my presentation skills or see what your comments are on the video, then as I let it roll, then the exact opposite narrative from a mainstream media source rolls after my video. And I find that really offensive. It's like exactly the opposite of what I just said. And you're free to watch. You should watch both to see, you know, which one you agree with, which one provides you the facts and data that they have no vested interest in providing to you. But yes, it does seem like, as Russell Brand says, the algorithm is not your friend.
It's crazy. Yeah, it's like they're like, oh, okay, you got some information from Redacted. Here's a CNN video to...
It's a palate cleanser.
Palate cleanser with some fake news just to kind of bring you back to, you know...
Right.
The control. All right, let's talk about this story. Well, the official story is that Israel, of course, had no idea that the October 7th attacks were coming. They were caught totally off guard by this. Yes. The most sophisticated organization in the world, the intelligence organization in the world, simply didn't know anything at all. Nothing. Nothing at all. That's what we're told, right? That's what they stand behind. That's what we're told. And yet, now we know that investors knew that the October 7th attack was coming. They made huge trades, and they made millions of dollars off of those trades, millions of dollars short selling Israeli companies. Almost as if they knew that those companies were going to collapse or have huge downswings. So they would make a lot of money on those downswings. And they made these trades right before the attack. Very convenient. This is not me saying this, by the way. This is research conducted by Columbia School of Law in New York and New York University. Researchers from both of those universities came together to collaborate on this. They analyzed incredible amounts of stock data before and after the October 7th Hamas attack, and they noticed some very odd behavior. So here is the name of this research abstract, Trading on Terror, by Robert Jackson Jr. and Joshua Mitz. And I'll just read some of the abstract here, and I'll quote from it. The short selling that day far exceeded the short selling that occurred during numerous periods of crisis, including the recession following the financial crisis, the 2014 Israel-Gaza war, the COVID-19 pandemic. Similarly, we identify increases in short selling before the attack in dozens of Israeli companies traded in Tel Aviv. In other words, some traders knew about the Hamas plan to attack Israel on October 7th and used that knowledge to make millions of dollars by short selling Israeli companies. That's their finding. Those company stocks plummeted in value and they made millions off of that knowledge. But interestingly, it didn't happen on U.S. stock exchanges. No, it happened on the Tel Aviv Stock Exchange. Here's more. Although we see no aggregate increase in shorting of Israeli companies on U.S. exchanges, we do identify a sharp and unusual increase just before the attacks in trading in risky short-dated options in these companies expiring just after the attacks. We identify similar patterns in the Israeli ETF at times when it was reported that Hamas was planning to execute a similar attack back in October. Our findings suggest that traders informed about the coming attacks profited from these tragic events. And consistent with prior literature, we show that trading of this kind occurs in gaps in U.S. and international enforcement of legal prohibitions on informed trading. So they knew they were coming and they operated within the cracks of that informed trading. Very sophisticated. Days before the attacks, traders appeared to anticipate the events to come, they wrote. They also wrote, citing short interest in the Israeli Stock Exchange, the exchange-traded fund, that suddenly and significantly spiked on October 2nd, based on data from the Financial Industry's Regulatory Authority, FINRA. The ETF is commonly used as a way for people to make investments in Israel, which on any given day has about 2,000 shares that are shorted. On any given day, it's about 2,000. However, on October 2nd, that number shot up to 227,000 shares in this, as according to the study revealed. The study found that just before the attack, short selling of Israeli securities on the Tel Aviv Stock Exchange increased dramatically. That's not a coincidence. I don't know. Maybe in the chat, you let us know. Do you think that that's a total coincidence? Let us know. Because in the days before September 11th, there was a lot of unusual trading activity that prompted investigators to look into it. Why did investors short American Airlines and United Airlines stock? And they didn't short Delta or other U.S. companies. It was highly selective which companies they chose to short, right? Like almost as if they knew those two airlines would have hijacked airplanes. In the month prior to September 11th attacks on the World Trade Center in the Pentagon, unusual trading activity involving American and United Airlines stock was noted by market analysts, who at the time had no idea what to make of it. Wildly unusual discrepancies in the put and call ratio, 25 to 100 times normal, were reportedly observed in stock options on the two airlines. In one case, Bloomberg's Tradebook electronic trading system identified option volume in UAL, which is the parent of United Airlines, on 16th of August 2001. That was 36 times higher than usual. Why also then did investors short Morgan Stanley and JP Morgan, which have offices in the trade towers? What do you guys think? Their stocks plummeted after their main offices were destroyed and the towers collapsed. So Bottom line here is some folks made a lot of money and had foreknowledge of this. I mean, are we still operating under the idea that these guys had no idea that October 7th was coming? I mean, we reported.
I don't know that I've ever been operating under that idea.
I mean, I never for one second believed that that was the truth, but that's the official narrative, that we were totally blindsided by it, right? We had no idea, and we can't believe it. Even though, as we reported here, and Egypt has reported separately, that they had easy knowledge of that and warned the Israelis that this was coming.
Yes, the Netanyahu government. That's right.
Told them specifically that this was coming. So we know confirmatively from the Egyptian side that that happened. But their official narrative is we didn't know anything about it. Okay. And it's convenient. Now we have a report out over the past 24 hours that all surveillance footage along the border has conveniently been deleted and erased. That is coming out of Israeli newspapers today as well. So all of that surveillance footage along the border that would show us exactly how Hamas carried out this attack, what was happening, were Israeli soldiers there? Was there? There are reports that many of them were told to stand down and allow things to unfold for up to an hour. There are those reports we've covered here on the show. So it's all very mysterious, but the official narrative is, of course, they had no idea that this was happening. And yet, wow, millions of dollars were traded and shorted on these Israeli companies just days before the attack, almost as if they knew it was happening. Let us know your thoughts on this in the comments below. Is this a coincidence or not?
It's very coincidental, no, it would seem.
Yeah.
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 It's interesting.
There are no coincidences. I really do not believe in it. I mean, I think we should put out another T-shirt that says there are no such thing as coincidences. But
okay.
But apparently that's how it'll be spun in the mainstream media. Or they're not actually, they're not even covering this story. So the mainstream media is totally ignoring this story, which I find unbelievable.
And they didn't really report much on Egypt's assertion that they had warned Israel about the October 7th attacks either.
Yeah. Well, also, you know, like interestingly for the 9/11 attacks, this data exists. You can clearly see it, and you can see the different short selling that was happening on United Airlines and American Airlines. That is irrefutable. And what happened with Morgan Stanley and JP Morgan, those stocks and shares, it's all out there publicly. And yet Snopes.com, which of course has been outed as fraud, they have labeled, oh, did people sell stocks before the 9/11 attacks? They've labeled it false. Like that's a false story. And no, it's not false at all, because the data clearly shows that there was an incredibly unusual amount of trading, short selling on these particular companies right before the 9/11 attacks. So that data exists. You can look it up for yourself, but Snopes chose to label it false.
Yeah.
So maybe Snopes needs to get on this and label this one false as well.
All right. Well, we have more news to get to. We're going to look at this hearing on transgender athletes in sports in just a minute. But first, we want to tell you about our friends over at Ares Tech, because do you know the amount of magnetic radiation coming out of your mobile devices? Well, of course, we don't know the cumulative effects of all of our devices around us all the time, right? Because scientists seem really uninterested in studying it. The one person who seems willing to talk about it is presidential candidate RFK Jr. But if you are concerned about it, you don't need to panic and throw your devices away. You can look into Ares Tech. It's the only scientist-trusted EMF protection solution. Ares devices neutralize harmful electromagnetic radiation and effectively counteract any negative impacts on your body. This is a revolutionary method for protection that goes beyond traditional blocking techniques designed for the tech-savvy person in the digital world that we live in, because science has proven that even low levels of radiation can have a negative impact on our health, ranging from disrupted sleep and fertility issues to even more serious problems like neurological decline. So, of course, we just keep introducing more and more tech into our lives without really thinking like, oh, is this a thing? We know how it affects certain populations of other species like bees and birds. So why wouldn't we think that maybe it has something to do with us? So look into this for yourself. Go to ArestTech.com. That's AIRESTech.com. Use the promo code REDACTED30 and you'll get 30% off. That's promo code REDACTED30 at checkout. And enjoy your tech without worrying while boosting your well-being. Check out Ares Tech today. And again, use promo code REDACTED30 for 30% off. That's ArestTech.com. BioLegal.com. All right, well, if you're a biological woman, you better shut up and get comfortable with losing to men in transgender sports, or not transgender sports, female sports. Female sports is the way we're saying it now. That's the message coming out of U.S. Congress. The House Oversight Committee held a hearing on transgender athletes and women and girls sports on Tuesday, and it was full of posturing. Calling people who express any concern about this as transphobic. Now, here's a clip that's gone viral. This is Congresswoman Summer Lee. She was called a misogynist by competitive swimmer Riley Gaines after she accused Gaines of being transphobic. Lee actually tried to get that statement struck from the record because she said that Gaines was engaged in personality, so she can dish it out, but she can't take it. Watch.
Such as teamwork and goal setting. In terms of mental health, studies show that participating in youth sports is associated with lower rates of anxiety and depression, lower amounts of stress, higher self-esteem and confidence.
Women must stop. Inclusion cannot be prioritized over safety and fairness. And Ranking Member Lee, if my testimony makes me transphobic, then I believe your opening monologue makes you a misogynist. Thank you.
I now thank you, Ms. Gaines. I now recognize Ms. Perry for her opening statements.
Good afternoon, Chairman McClain, Ranking Member Lee, and distinguished members of the subcommittee. My name is Sarah Parshall Perry. I am a senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation. As a former varsity athlete, the mother of a girls varsity athlete, and former senior counsel for civil rights at the Department of Education, I have, as the saying goes...
Madam Chair, excuse me, I move to have the gentlewoman's words taken down.
Words
taken the committee down. Will suspend.
What she's asking for here is for the accusation of being misogynistic to be struck from the record. You can keep playing it because they're just going to mumble for a few minutes and then you see what happens. So, yes, she specifically does not want it to be on record.
She's engaging in personalities.
What she says here is that her calling me something was engaging in personalities.
Can I just ask how it's fair to be called transphobic?
I would say men disguising themselves as women are engaging in personalities.
Order.
Let's get a ruling. The chair.
Oh my God, this is unbelievable. AOC. So you don't like to dish out bad names.
Yeah, only I can call you something. You can't call something.
I'm a victim, so I'm gonna. Let's hear it. What's the verdict, Your Honor?
Okay, I move to withdraw the point of order.
Oh,
okay.
Thank you, Ms. Lee.
So they must have told her that you can't do that. Right. You can't move to restrict something from the record. It's on camera. And if you just restrict it, it's just the written version, which no one will read. We've all seen it now.
Right. This isn't the White House where the president can give a speech and then later the White House comes out with their transcript and there are huge swaths of the transcript missing from the video.
So she threw the dagger by calling the day's witnesses transphobic, but she couldn't take any daggers back. That call now is on the record. She's been called a misogynist and it will stick. Here's how she responded to that on X. She says, I would have hoped that the first oversight Dems hearing that I presided over would be on holding big oil, big pharma, or banks accountable for preying on hardworking families. Instead, it's another extremist Republican hearing attacking trans kids. What a cruel, unserious party. Now, I don't know why. Let's leave this picture up. She thinks that that petulant photo will endear her to people. She looks like a crybaby. And we know that she was accused of being a misogynist, and that is an unserious response, I would say. But I guess she posted this herself, thinking, wow, I'm really showing them, right? Okay, the comments on this post are pretty great. I just brought one screenshot where someone says, nope, you're a misogynist, and you can never strike that from the record. Why do you hate women?
I like the top one. You got your ass handed to you and it was glorious. That's from Nuclear Taco.
Right. And the one at the bottom calling her a crybaby and a wannabe totalitarian. and a racist. So there was a lot of this rhetoric. I want to play you AOC saying that. Now, she makes an argument that is truly dizzying, almost too stupid to even give airtime to, but we're going to try and follow her logic. This is a brand new paradigm, she's saying, that if we validate biological sex, then we can then go and touch women's genitals. That's what she's saying, that this is a ruse to get to touch real women. It's almost an admission that there is a difference between biological women and trans women. It's hard to follow this argument, but let's try.
I started to realize that a lot of these proposals here involve invasion of privacy of all women. Ms. Goss Graves, can you tell us a little bit about what sex testing looks like for youth in states with trans athletic bans?
It's terrible. In some states, any individual could challenge whether someone is a girl enough to play. In some states, it requires actual genital verification, which is shocking. And there aren't, it's not as if there...
And let me just stop you right there. You said there are some proposals. I mean, we've seen this in Ohio. There was a proposed ban on trans athletes that originally allowed for genital examinations on minors in order to quote unquote protect women. Is that correct?
Unfortunately, yes.
And so we're seeing here in this guise, under the guise of not only trying to further marginalize trans women and girls, we are talking about opening up all women and girls to genital examinations when they are underage.
That's right.
Potentially just because someone can point to someone and say, I don't think you're a girl.
That's correct.
And we're saying this in an environment of a post-Dobbs America where states are criminalizing access to abortion and want nothing more than data on women to figure out when, who's getting a menstrual cycle, who doesn't have one.
What?
And yeah, she's really stupid. We're supposed to believe that this is going to make us better and safer.
What the hell?
Okay. So she's not at all addressing the issue that there is an unfair competitive advantage that is hurting female athletes.
Right,
instead,
that's the heart
she's
of the
saying, oh, but this will make everyone submit a vagina as proof. And this is a problem because it will allow for data collection on women based on these vaginal inspections. Now, no biological woman has said, I had to put up my vagina in order to compete. And wouldn't a simple test for this be sex assigned at birth? So right. We could then skip these vaginal probes that she says we will then be subject to.
Yeah, you're born naked and the doctors at the hospital make a determination. Oh, girl, boy, girl,
right.
Boy. You've got XX chromosome, XY chromosome. Girl, boy, done. Here you go. Here's your paperwork.
All humans get a vaginal inspection or a genital inspection at birth.
Yeah.
And so maybe that should stick. And then we don't have to subject anybody to any genital inspection.
Right. If there's
sports.
If there's some sort of a question as to what your gender is.
Right.
You know, first of all, you have an ID card, right, that you presumably got and you had to show your sex, whether your driver's license or otherwise. Right.
Right.
But yeah, if it got to that point, hey, here's your, you know, submit
a
birth certificate.
Well, here's a question. How many biological women have been asked to show their vaginas in order to compete? Is this a problem that we need to start worrying about? I'm just asking, right? She's saying that this is something that's going to become a ruse for data collection because they will look at your vagina and know when you menstruated last, and then they're going to start collecting data on us, like abortion clinics have.
It's ridiculous.
Been accused of.
Yeah, don't even give it any. I mean,
right.
It's ridiculous.
Now there is a way actually to prove your chromosomes without looking at anyone's genitals, and in fact, I do want to admit that non-biological women have had this happen, not biological women, but intersexed women. I want to introduce you to Maria Jose Martinez Patino. She was a world-class hurdler who was denied participation in World University Games in the 80s because she had XY chromosomes that was found on a blood test. So she did not have to submit her vaginals. This was when they did sex testing in Olympic sports based on blood test. She hadn't known that before, that she had a XY chromosome. She was asked then to fake an injury in order to get out of the competition, and she refused. People call her a trans athlete's hero. She's not trans. She was a straight woman who was intersexed. It's clearly a different thing to allow her to compete and ask women to compete against biological men, wouldn't you say? Yeah. Clearly, those are different things. But advocates for trans athletes say, oh, so no women should suck it up.
Well, Jamie Lee Curtis is a straight woman.
Yes.
Right? And she's acknowledged that she also
is intersex.
Yes.
I thought that was a rumor.
I don't know. I've heard that that's a rumor, but apparently that there's like some XY chromosome issue, but I don't know.
Uh-huh. You're the transvestite cheerleader from Long Island? That's from Friends reference. No, you didn't get it.
No, I didn't get it at all. I never get any Friends references.
Okay. David, did you get that one? Philip, anybody?
I don't watch Friends.
You guys don't get my Friends references? Okay.
Yes.
David would, but I think he had a power outage. That's why he's so quiet.
Oh, okay. Okay, fine. Now, anyway, I want to get back to this idea that women should just sort of suck it up and compete against biological men, because that's what this woman, National Women's Law Center President Fatima Goss, there's no R. Her last name's not Gross, but I think what she says is gross. Fatima Goss Graves says that female athletes should learn to lose gracefully because transgender competitors are here.
And success in school sports depends on a whole range of factors, including how hard you work and coaching and access to really good resources and facilities. And trans students participate in sports for the same reason as their kids, because it is fun, because it creates belonging and community, because it teaches so much about persistence and leadership and discipline, unless they learn to lose gracefully, hopefully. And often they learn to win with dignity, hopefully. They learn to do the sort of work that means you have higher grades and stay connected to school. I want every kid to have that chance, to have the chance to play. So I feel compelled to just end my testimony with a few ideas for the committee to pursue if it really wants to work on this issue. We could make it safer for student athletes who report harassment and sexual misconduct. We could address resource
Okay. I liked Jennifer Say. She was the Levi executive who was fired because she spoke out against school lockdowns. She said, where were these Democrats talking about the wonderful connection of sports during 2 years of lockdowns? Now we think everyone should play sports whenever the F they feel like it, because it's such a positive experience, except during lockdowns. Stay the heck home. So that was an interesting take. So, okay, she wants women to just be gracious, you know, allow men into their sports. So here's an example of one woman who did just that. This is Kristen Chalmers. She is the one on the bronze podium. This is third place at the female race at the Illinois State Cyclocross Championship over the weekend. She lost to the two men to her left, trans-identified men who were competing as women and calling themselves Tessa Johnson and Evelyn Williamson. These two have been dunking on women all year, so much so that they hold hands while doing it. Take a look at this picture. They've lapped all the competitors so they can hold hands, while everyone else who's a biological woman and doesn't have that muscle mass can't even, you don't even see them. No ladies in this picture, so they can, while they lap you, hold hands. The one called Williamson, the dark-haired one, is also reportedly in a polyamorous relationship with fellow trans cyclist Austin Killips, who competes also against biological women and has become notorious for shoving that in their face. And also was, I believe, He
look how big, how much Killips, bigger, look how much taller these guys are.
Right.
Next to the woman.
Was notorious for shoving a competitor during a race. A man entered a woman's race and shoved her, but thinks that they have the right to be there. So not only are they lapping women, pushing women out of the way, taking their gold medals, but also using these events for their gay love display, because that's not polyamorous. They are both men. That is homosexuality in women's sports. So let's call it what it is. So let us know what you think about this. Is this now a new problem that biological women are going to have to put up their vaginas for inspections? Is this the problem? Is it data collection? Or is it a simple problem that could be fixed in a way that it has been fixed all along? Let us know what you think of that. That's going to do it for us today.
That's ridiculous. And I guess men would have to do the same thing. I mean, they'd have to show
your balls.
Yeah, they'd have to go out there like, all right, can you step up here? I mean, if there's really a question, like I see your facial hair and your Adam's apple.
Yeah.
But I want to double check that you don't also have a vagina.
Uh-huh. And is there a weight limit? Like how much do the balls have to weigh?
I mean, you're 6 foot three. You're 6 foot three. You have an Adam's apple and you have face stubble.
Right.
I just got to double check that you don't also have a vagina. You've entered a woman's competition. Do you know where you are? You've entered a woman's cycling competition.
Right. I mean, she's opening up to then let's do blood tests. If you don't want anyone to have to submit their vagina, then we'll go back to blood tests. Do you want that? Because that is no longer done in most sports. But again, there is assigned at birth and obvious biology. At the very least, we're not talking about this totally bogus hormone level or puberty level, because hormones and puberty are not the only thing that gives biological advantage. But, you know, that seemed to be something that people postured about. Now, today in the UK, there was a debate, and we're going to cover that tomorrow, because the gender debate is no longer sort of on Twitter, but it is in Parliament now, and in what I think is a more progressive way than at least the United States is doing it. Although I do want to say, we did not play you the many women who spoke out coherently and, you know, expertly and bravely on behalf of biological women. You can watch that. We were only showing you the idiots.
Yeah.
Really.
Contentious parts.
Yeah.
All right.
The pretentious verse, yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, thank you guys so much for joining us today. We do have a Plus Club, and I'd love for you to come over and check it out. And if you'd like to support independent journalism, again, it's totally free to watch our show here. You don't have to pay a penny to watch our show. But if you do want to take that extra step and join our Plus Club, you can. The Redacted Plus membership will get you access to exclusive content before anyone else, and only for you guys. The new book club, which is launching, has already just launched. It's actually the first round of videos for that are going to launch this Friday. So if you'd like to join the book club, the Redacted Book Club, very excited about that. And that'll just be behind the scenes for Redacted Plus members. And the way to do that is just go to redacted.inc. And on the right side of your screen there, click the community button. And if you're on Locals right now, if you're watching us on Rumble, you can just click the red button and join right there, right through Rumble. Rumble has it nicely integrated, so it's much easier there. You can do it. But if you're watching us on YouTube, hop on over to redacted.inc and click that link, and then join us for the price of a cup of coffee once a month. You can support independent journalism and support what we do here. So we really, really appreciate it. We will be back tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern time. Thank you guys so much for being a part of our great community here. We love all of you. Thank you guys for all of your different opinions. You know, there's not like one opinion, one size fits all. We love the back and forth and seeing everyone's different opinions on stories and interactions. So thank you guys so much for that. And we'll see you guys tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern time. Have a great night, everyone.
Bye.